The joy of ebooks is that great stories are just a click away. For our podcast listeners, we have a great offer on Luke Harding's book Mafia State, a menacing tale of life as a journalist in present-day Russia. I'll tell you more at the end of the show.
The Guardian.
We all know that we've still got a lot of work to do. And so the question here tonight is not where we've been, but where we're going.
Now, I'm concerned that the path that we're on has just been unsuccessful. The president has a view very similar to the view he had when he ran 4 years ago, that a bigger government, spending more, taxing more, regulating more, if you will, trickle-down government, would work.
When he said behind closed doors that 47% of the country considered themselves victims, who refused personal responsibility, think about who he was talking about.
So, Barack Obama and Mitt Romney have slugged it out in the debates, and now, in the final days of the campaign, the battle is on to get out the vote. Hello and welcome to a special US election edition of Politics Weekly. I'm Tom Clark. So, in a moment, we'll be hearing from top columnists on both sides of the Atlantic, but before we turn to the wordsmiths, let's get the view of a number cruncher. Stan Greenberg, who's advised presidents and presidential candidates in the past, is a top American pollster, and I caught him earlier to get his take on the state of the race.
Well, we're studying this very closely, and there's kind of a big judgment about where the election is and where it's headed, you know, based on how you examine the surveys. You know, kind of the commentariat, you know, is that Romney, you know, changed the race in the first debate, and it's been trending to him into this last debate. And the question is, did Obama do enough to kind of stabilize the race, hold off to the end here? And I actually don't think that's what happened, you know, in the debates, or where the race is. And it's pretty important to what you think happens in the next, you know, week and on to the election in November. Right now, you know, we're going to know where this race is in the next few days. You know, in my experience, you know, advising presidential candidates, being part of the debate process, is that voters view this as kind of the authentic part of the election. Not true in Britain, of course. We now know that debates reveal the least authentic part of the qualities of the candidates. But in the U.S., with so much, you know, so many hundreds of million being spent on advertising, particularly in these battleground states, that voters are like tuning them out and waiting for these authentic moments. So the debate, you know, is very important. You know, we're going to see the race edge toward Obama right now, and hopefully that plays out in the battleground states.
And so, it sounds from what you were saying like you think we might be heading back towards a situation where you could envisage a margin of 1.5 to 2.5 points. And then the American Constitution, which by some bizarre genius engineers an electoral system whereby you can lose the popular vote in a two-person contest in a nationwide ballot and still lose, as we saw in the year 2000 when Bush beat Gore. There's a lot of focus now on whether that might happen again. Do you think that's likely, or do you think whoever carries a popular vote is going to carry the day as well?
Well, it's not clear without a constitution that you've managed much better in terms of the majority of voters and their preferences. And I for sure would abolish the Electoral College in a minute, having worked for Al Gore. You know, I know they and John Kerry. I mean, where we almost won the election in the Electoral College. Even though, you know, losing by 2.5 points, which would not have been a great outcome in terms of a mandate for bringing, you know, change. You know, about 90% of what happens is reflected by national trends, so that when the president's well ahead, he has, you know, he also has leads in the battleground states. So usually a big, you know, significant lead nationally translates into a significant Electoral College lead. But, you know, these battleground states are small enough, and the amount of money being spent and the organizational effort is such is that they tend to get closer, you know, because of that. So even though the president, you know, might move toward a 2 or 3 point lead, which I think, you know, is coming, it's still, you know, it still could be won by Romney in the battleground states. Actually, as I look at it state by state, you know, you know, I'm probably more optimistic that Obama will win the battleground states, you know, than he has a big margin, you know, nationally, because I just don't see any evidence that Ohio, you know, is trending, you know, toward Romney. There's just too much been played out already in the Ohio story, and the auto bailout and the economy there being somewhat better, and the Romney being, you know, pretty much defined early as someone out of touch with ordinary people and working people. And so I'm quite happy to put our fate, you know, to Ohio voters as the way for Obama, to finish this. And I think he's probably going to win both the popular vote and the electoral college.
Stan Greenberg there. Well, here I am in London, joined by our Anglo-American columnist, Hadley Freeman, and on Skype by our friend and former Washington man, Jonathan Friedland, as well as from the DC office today, Richard Adams. A warm welcome to you all. Hadley, we'd all written off Mitt Romney for dead, hadn't we? Not all that long ago. And what's happened?
Well, his performance in the first debate certainly disproved that popular theory that debates don't matter. He really did a Lazarus there and came back fighting. Although, you know, the glass half empty view of him is really that it's not that he came back fighting, it's that Obama was so poor. But he really dominated that first debate, and if he hadn't, he would have been written off for good. As it is, Obama's had to come out on top on the next two in order for him not to be written off. It just goes to show how close this election really is.
So he may have been dead, but Obama proved to be deader. It's said, you know, as Hadley says, that these debates aren't meant to change anything. That's what all the sages always say, isn't it?
They do. I mean, a good rule I used to follow, which sounds perhaps slightly cheeky, when I was in Washington, was that the conventional wisdom is always wrong there. So if everybody's telling you one thing, you know, it's time to sort of check, you know, count the spoons. And the conventional wisdom is debates don't matter. I have to say, I always had in my mind the year 2000, when Al Gore went into the debates 5 points ahead and came out of them 5 points behind, because people didn't find him likable and they found him too aggressive, etc. And I also, you know, you should always have in your mind 1980, where Carter was ahead before the debate and Reagan cleared a crucial threshold and proved he wasn't the maniac his opponents had depicted him as, and suddenly came through as the plausible president. So debates don't always matter, but they can sometimes matter. And I think this year, 2012, will be remembered as a year when they absolutely did matter, because before the debates, Romney was easily cast by the Obama camp as just this out-of-touch, feather-bedded plutocrat who was just clumsy and gormless and extreme and inconsistent and a flip-flopper and all those things. And then he comes out of the debate absolutely looking like a plausible and genuine contender for the White House. And I think that what Hadley says is right about that first debate. A whole lot of people, voters, were thinking, I'm down on Obama. You know, if I can, I would vote against him. But can I? They take one look at Romney in that debate and think, yes, I can, to turn the Obama slogan against him. They think it is okay to vote for Romney. And that was a crucial thing. And only the debates could have done that for him. So now we're into a properly level pegging race. And it's because of those debates. So, yes, they do matter.
So echoes of 1980 and what you're saying there, Johnny, he had to prove he was not a lunatic and did so. But Richard, should we be analysing this? I mean, it's easy to do this in terms of Romney. We'd ignored him until the campaign got going. But really, aren't the roots of Obama's problems with Obama's own presidency?
Well, yes. I mean, that's true. And I think that's the reason why Romney suddenly improved in the poll standings. There was a latent anti-Obama vote just sitting there, and it was waiting for a vehicle. And when Romney showed up and didn't, you know, and looked as a plausible anti-Obama vote, then suddenly a lot of undecided voters flocked to him. And, I mean, I wrote before the debates that I thought it was silly to say that debates don't matter, because we had at least three instances where they did matter out of the vote. There have only been 10 presidential debates and 10 presidential cycles, and at least three cases they've moved the polls, which seemed to me, you know, sort of one out of three batting average was pretty good. But yes, I mean, you know, we go back to the problem that, you know, Obama's presidency has been mired in, you know, economic difficulties, and unemployment is very high, and because the US doesn't have the sort of safety nets that Europe has, that Americans look to political leaders, particularly the president, to provide jobs. or at least to promise to provide jobs. And Romney has been able to, you know, make a plausible case. And that's, you know, where it was always going to go, I think. And that's where we've ended up.
Well, earlier I spoke to Jeffrey Cabot-Service, the author of Rule and Ruin, A Modern History of the Republican Party, and I asked him, if Mitt Romney wins in November, will the US get a moderate president or something more extreme?
Well, that's exactly what we don't know. And this is part of why this is such a nail-biter of an election here. Mitt Romney campaigned very far to the right during the Republican presidential primaries. And he stayed with those right positions until quite late in the game. It wasn't really until that first debate that he began to pivot back towards the center of American opinion. And he's so far maintained that position. In last night's debate, he was at pains to distance himself from neoconservative foreign policy, for example. So I think the answer is that we just don't know how Romney will govern if he is elected president, because the right wing still controls most of the Republican Party, and yet Mitt Romney has benefited from presenting a more moderate face to the electorate.
Where else would you say that he's moved back from some of the more extreme positions adopted in the primary campaign?
Well, in last night's debate, for example, he obviously did repudiate the Dick Cheney theory of how you get to world domination. He was saying that we need to essentially support development efforts in the Muslim world, which we really hadn't heard before. He was backing Obama's policies in a number of areas which he had opposed, particularly Afghanistan and Iraq. And generally, he's presenting himself to the American people as someone who's not going to push hard on the social issues. He has already basically said that he won't be advancing new anti-abortion legislation, for example, and presenting himself largely as a pragmatic problem solver on the economy. And again, this is not something we heard earlier on in the campaign when he was taking very aggressive stances on immigration, for example. We haven't heard much about the Ryan plan, even though Paul Ryan is Romney's running mate at this point. So, like I said, it's very difficult to know how exactly he'll govern because his positions have been rather fluid.
And in the event that he should win, I mean, he won almost despite his party. He got that nomination. They never trusted him. They thought he was a moderate from Massachusetts and all of that. But if he wins, he'll be in obviously a more powerful position. He'll be the undoubted leader of his party. Do you think there's any chance that he could lead the party back towards the more moderate republicanism that his father was as represented as you've been writing about?
I doubt it, because the Republican Party in 2012 is simply not the Republican Party that it was in 1968 when George Romney was campaigning for the presidency. Nowadays, the Republican Party is controlled top to bottom by the right wing. Conservatives control virtually every aspect of the Republican infrastructure. And there's even very few policymakers who are left from the more moderate George H.W. Bush presidency. So I think Romney would have a very difficult time bucking his party to really present more moderate policies or take a more moderate line. I think, for example, he will be bound to nominate a conservative Supreme Court justice should a vacancy arise, and that would almost certainly mean the end of the Roe versus Wade decision that protects the rights to an abortion. So my guess is that Romney might take a more moderate line on foreign policy. He might not push as hard as one might think on the Ryan budget and so forth, but it will be a very conservative presidency.
Now, Hadley, as Jeff explained, Romney went some way to the right, or some would say wildly to the right, to win the Republican nomination. And yet he's now disowning these positions. Do you think the Obama campaign seems sufficiently fired up about proving, you know, sorry, about reminding him of all the things that he said during that long slog around the country in the primaries?
Well, in a lot of ways, sort of the most sort of difficult opponent that Romney faced in the debates wasn't Obama, but was Romney. And that Obama kept bringing up things that he had said before. Once he got into the second debate, he was much more tenacious about that. In the first debate, as we all know, he basically slept through. So that is a problem. In order to be electable within the Republican Party, it's the old cliche, you have to be made inelectable to the rest of the country generally. America is a conservative country, but it's much more centrist than the sort of hardcore Republican Party would like it to be. So that is definitely what the Obama campaign is going to be focusing on, and sort of pointing out all the contradictions. And they've been doing that during the debates. They certainly were doing it in the spin rooms after the debates this time. But whether it's too late, whether people care, that remains to be seen.
I mean, Johnny, you'll remember one of the George Bush campaigns, I think, was against Kerry, and they had the giant flip-flops, didn't they, that they were waving around at their conventions. And it was crude and it was done early and done often, just this idea that here was a slippery guy who changed his mind about everything. It doesn't feel like Obama's team are doing something anything quite so blunt.
No, I mean, I think it's partly because they were pressing that theme for so long that by the time you got to the autumn, it was, if perhaps slightly tired, I mean, they had had the whole year to do that. The other thing is that's odd because it's almost, you know, he's turned it into a virtue, is that the traditional pivot, if you like, that's a nice word for the flip-flop, that a candidate makes from their primary campaign to then they pivot and turn towards the centre. Normally happens a bit earlier. It happens through the summer. And Romney, partly because the primary campaign went on so long and partly through his own ineptitude, just wasn't doing that. He was still having tend to the base. He left it very late and he didn't really happen for him until October the 3rd in that first debate when he unveiled the return of moderate Mitt. Now, when that character emerged, that was the point, really, where, you know, metaphorically speaking, you'd bring out the flip-flops. But if anything, it was too late. Now, that should have been a big disadvantage for Romney, leaving it so late to make that pivot. But in a funny way, it did leave and sort of wrong foot the Obama campaign, because it's left them with just too little time to change their own strategy. So he's had the run of this debate season. And so for once, he's actually made a virtue of what otherwise strategically had looked like a mistake.
So wrong-footed by a flip-flop. Richard, do you think in states where people are already voting, this flip-flop thing is going to play very big? I mean, or do you think it's come so late that it's almost shocking people?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, as Jonathan says, you know, the Democrats had been running with this for quite a while, and possibly before anyone took any notice. After Romney's 47% gaffe, they changed tack somewhat and decided to call him an extremist, which made his shift to the centre in the first debate more effective from Romney's point of view. And that was actually at just the point where, you know, the early polls and early voting was taking place. I mean, it's anybody's guess. There's a whole cottage industry here right now about, you know, what the meaning of early voting, and you know, it's impossible to say. I really don't know, and we just won't know until the 6th of November. I mean, as to the question of what type of president Romney would be, given his incredibly vague policy positions and rapid shifts in ideology, it would appear, over his career, not just in the last few months, I think it's almost impossible to say. So, which is in some ways a terrifying thought, in some ways from a journalist's point of view, fascinating one.
Well, one area where it will be especially interesting to see what President Romney, should he arrive, does is, of course, the economy. And Bill Clinton famously never actually said that it was the economy, stupid, that turns things. But this year, that is truer than ever. Our economics columnist, Aditya Chakraborty, has been travelling across the US, and I asked him what he'd found.
The thing that everyone says about these elections is that the economy is the number one issue. And that strikes me as being both right and wrong. I spent a few days in September travelling from east to west coast, and before I went, I thought everyone would be talking about the state of the economy, how it failed to have a serious recovery from the recession, and why the jobs numbers were so bad. But actually, that's not what they talked about. You could talk to employees, you could talk to state senators, you could talk to economists. And what you heard was not so much about the short-term things, so not so much about the difference between Obama and Romney. So what you'd hear is about how wages have barely risen in real terms for the average family for decades now. You'd hear about how students have had to load up on debt, and according to one of the branches of the Federal Reserve, that's been the only bit of the debt market that's been growing since the Great Recession. What you'd get less of is the kind of debate that we're used to in Britain, which is, you know, about cuts versus no cuts, too far, too fast, the banking system and that sort of thing. What I particularly noticed was a level of anger from right and left directed at the elite in America, who perceived to have done extremely well despite the Great Recession. Probably the one question that was asked more than any other by people that I talked to was, why is it no one on Wall Street has gone to jail for the financial crisis? We sometimes forget how much was expected and hoped of Barack Obama in 2008. There's a really good book by a journalist called Noam Schieber, called The Escape Artists, How Barack Obama Fumbled a Recovery. And in it, he reports a conversation between Obama and his Treasury Secretary, Tim Geithner, just before they took power. And the conversation goes something like this. Geithner says to Obama, your big achievement will have been to avert the Great Depression. That's how you're going to go down in history. And Obama replies, that's not enough. And Geithner's palpably surprised by this and says, but if you don't manage to avert the Great Recession, then you won't be able to achieve anything else. And Obama says, that's not enough. In comparison to Europe, he hasn't done the stupid thing of cutting back spending. So they haven't had the quite painful contraction that we've seen in Britain or in Southern Europe. But what he hasn't done is he hasn't used the moment of 2008 to effect a great transformation, which was what was hoped for from his supporters on the left. Instead, what you have is an economy that's been propped up to do pretty much the same things as it did before the crisis, with ever-increasing inequality and debt loaded on those who can't afford to keep up.
So, Johnny, for many of his supporters, Obama's been a disappointing president. He'll always be America's first black president. It's too early, obviously, to write the political obit now. But if he does lose in 2 weeks' time, Obamacare might well be undone. Is there anything else this president will be remembered for?
Well, he'll be remembered for the death of Osama bin Laden. That will be very important. And for rescuing the automobile industry. You know, the bumper sticker in America now, GM's alive and bin Laden's dead. That sort of summarizes the Obama pitch. I think what you're putting your finger on is something fascinating, which is that the same four-year period would be remembered entirely differently depending if Obama wins or loses. I'm thinking of writing on this for the column this week, because I think it's one of those sort of cruel things about politics, which is, and particularly American politics, if you are a one-term president, everything about you is deemed a failure. You become a byword for failure, as Jimmy Carter was, and less to a lesser extent, George Bush's father. And it takes a long time, 20, 30 more years, for people to then take a good clear look at what you did, and particularly this has happened in the case of Bush Senior, to have a look at the record and say it's good. Now, I think the historians will be kind, whatever happens to Obama's first term, because they'll look at the hand he was dealt, an impossible economic situation, biggest crisis since the Great Depression, and you know, two wars and a trashing of America's reputation around the world, and they'll say he did pretty well considering. But if you are a one-term president, you are pushing against a historical view that wants to put the word failure alongside your name. I think he's actually got considerable achievements. But also at stake in this election is how people will see Obama. And I would also just throw in there, I think it would be pretty bad if people do regard America's first black presidency as a failure. That will be bad for, you know, the racial harmony of the country, because that will just lead to a kind of angst around what should have been a positive for the country.
Hadley, can you bear to imagine what the political obit would say?
Well, as Johnny says, it really depends on whether he gets a second term. I think in terms of how it will affect America if he doesn't get in, I think one thing to definitely look at is the Supreme Court and who Romney would appoint in that case, because I think it's two appointments that might be up for next term. I can't remember. Richard will probably correct me at that point. And the idea of the Supreme Court being so far to the right would affect an entire generation of American voters. I think that's one of the scariest things to look at. And also the effect of Paul Ryan so close to the White House. That sort of his views on so many things just seem to me, threatened to put America in a certain dark age, really, in terms of education and women's rights. That's the thing to really fear.
And Richard, you've previously written a lot about economics. The big thing, as one of Obama's advisors has said to him, is that the thing you should hope to be remembered for is avoiding another Great Depression, which he said wasn't enough for him.
I mean, I think if Obama loses, he'll be remembered for pushing ahead with a healthcare reform effort in the midst of a terrible recession, and that will ultimately be seen as a political failure, even though it didn't feel like it at the time. That the time and energy he spent on doing healthcare reform would have been better spent on, you know, fixing the economy. Although I think that will be how he's remembered. I'm not sure it's an accurate way, but I think that's the way it will work. And as for President Romney, well, I mean, I think whoever wins will probably inherit an improving economy. And it's a bit like Ronald Reagan in 1980. Jimmy Carter had done the hard work, and the Federal Reserve had done the hard work in the late 70s, and they were throttling inflation and getting the economy back on track. And Carter did a lot of things like deregulate the airline industry and all sorts of other things that people now realize were good. And then Reagan came along and, you know, the economy was already improving. Same with Bill Clinton, you could say, in 1992. So if Mitt Romney wins, I think he'll be a lucky president, and he'll reap the rewards.
Gosh, now we really have got my behest very ahead of ourselves there in looking that far into the future. But let's have cards on the table now, Richard. Money where your mouth is. Which way do you think it's going to go, if you had to say?
It's incredibly close right now. I tend to be a pessimist about these things. Romney's got the momentum at the moment, and if he has another good week, he'll win it.
Hadley?
I sort of put my money where my heart is, really. So I think Obama's going to squeak through, to be honest.
Now, Johnny, not that long ago, you wrote a column saying it was slightly more likely than not that Romney would win, and a lot happened since. That was, a couple of months ago. Where are you now?
Just to be defensive, I mean, what I wrote a couple of months ago was that it was close and it could be President Romney. And a lot of people thought that was sort of, you know, way out of line at the time. And that's sort of where I would stay with it. I think it is much, much closer than people realize. And it is now utterly plausible, as Richard said, that we could wake up on November the 7th to President-elect Romney. And, I'm torn because I think I can see exactly how it could be a replay of Bush Kerry in 04 with Obama squeaking through. But equally, that feeling of momentum and the sense that the guy is somehow, you know, a loser, that if that grows, that sense, then I think I could see Obama losing. So I think it is absolutely close, and I think it could be a very, very long night on November the 6th.
Well, I'm going to use some chair's prerogative here not to make a prediction. I'm normally happy to predict Labour leadership elections or rebellions at the Lib Dem conference or whatever, but this one does just feel too close and too painful to call. But you can follow the final stages of the presidential campaign on Richard's live blog and elsewhere on guardian.co.uk. We'll have another special edition of this podcast once the results are in, but join us again on Thursday where we've got more of the usual fodder from Westminster. So my thanks to Jonathan, to Hadley and to Richard and the other guests. The producer was Phil Maynard. I'm Tom Clark, and thanks very much for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.
For a limited period only, we have an exclusive ebook offer for Guardian podcast listeners. Guardian columnist Luke Harding's Mafia State is a dark and ominous insight into the life of a journalist in present-day Russia. We're offering 30% off the list price of $4.99. All you have to do is go to the ebook store www.kobo.com, that's KOBO.com, and at checkout put in the discount code MAFIASTATE for your Guardian podcast offer.